32. The Ultimate Creative Act. I would like to pass on a truth that has been wonderfully illuminating and helpful to me, as I have learned and experienced more through the years of dying with Christ. It comes from my spiritual and literary mentor, George MacDonald, 1824 to 1905, 19th century pastor, theologian, and novelist. To approach this truth, I would ask you to consider for a moment a question. What is the grandest, most glorious thing that can be done in this life? What is the highest achievement possible? What is the ultimate that this life has to offer any man or woman? In answer, MacDonald speaks of a second creation, brought to us, exampled to us, and whose power is made available to us by the Son of God, Jesus Christ Himself. The first creation, given the world by the Father, was fulfilled in the first Adam. He was made in the image of God. As life was breathed into Adam's nostrils, that first creation reached its crowning zenith. Life, God's own life, was born within him. What made the form of life given to Adam's race so unique? The gift of a free and independent will that God placed into him. This will is the deepest, strongest, most God-like thing in man. It is our link with God Himself, the piece of Himself He placed within us when He created us in His image. We speak of the soul, but what is the most fundamental part of that soul? What separates it from lower creature life? Not merely the ability to think, for though we obviously think on a far higher level, animals after their fashion can think as well. The distinction is the capacity to make moral decisions, to order our way according to right and wrong. It is what gives us a spiritual consciousness and the potential to become spiritual beings. Free will. Try to imagine the enormity of what God did. Create beings that were like Him, and yet at the same time, separate from Him. So separate, in fact, as to be capable of choosing or not choosing to have anything to do with Him. What an astounding thing! This fully free will we have been given is simply and unarguably the most remarkable aspect of the entire creation. It is the only thing that is truly ours, completely ours, our very, very own. For having given it to us, God stepped back and in a sense bound the hands of His own omnipotence from interfering with it. The wonder of the thing is beyond words. God so honors the free will of man that He allows him to sink or swim with it, on his own. In a sense, then, all of life, the foundational drama of existence, is nothing more than a living out of the question, what will we do with this magnificent possession with which God has endowed us? How will we use the gift? What will we make of it? The will is the only thing I really possess, that any of us have, that is truly mine. What will I do with it? It is the great story of life, of history, of eternity. What will I, me, Michael Phillips, now, today, do with my free will? Naturally comes again the question in a slightly different form that I posed earlier. What is the highest thing I can do with it? What is the ultimate use I can make of my will? If I make the discovery of some wonderful place, what first comes to my mind? To share it, to give the discovery to another. If I make the acquaintance of a great book or a new author who excites me, as I have, in fact, during recent months, what is the first thing that comes to my mind? To share that discovery and knowledge, to give it to others. Why did I want to give away my discovery of George MacDonald more than 30 years ago by editing and republishing his books? It was the highest and most wonderful use I could make of my discovery, to give it away. The highest is always to give, and is not the giving of what is most prized the best gift of all? Many have called my work with MacDonald a labor of love, and though I have been enriched abundantly by the process myself, and though it has only in very minor ways represented a sacrifice, on another level, that statement is not so far from the truth. Indeed, for many of the facsimiles we publish, we must break apart prized, valuable editions in order to reprint them. These rare old original copies truly do give their lives that the truths within their pages may be available to many more. The highest, then, is always to give. It is the reason why the most far-reaching love involves sacrifice. For to give most deeply always means one must give oneself. For God so loved the world that he gave. To give, to yield, to give away, even to give up. These are the ingredients of the highest forms of love we know how to express. We come back then to the will, not just any will, an abstract will, but your will and my will. What is the highest, the deepest, the ultimate thing we can each do with our will? I would pose this answer to that high question. Yield it, abandon it, sacrifice it, and give it back to our Creator and Father who gave it to us in the first place. We now approach holy ground, the pinnacle of what human life can and should and was intended to mean. When I asked in the previous chapter if you were willing to boldly venture up the hill of Calvary, there to discover childship, we at last now reach the apex of that climb. The will is all we possess, to place it back into the hands of the Father, yielding it forever, represents the greatest, indeed the perfect, expression of human freedom. When Jesus commanded us, "Be perfect," I believe it was of this he was speaking, the laying down of the right to self-rule. Such a self-willed abandonment is the greatest thing that can be accomplished in this life. In such an act do we reach the crowning apex of human personhood, the very culmination of what we were created to be. Having achieved independence, adulthood, mature manhood and womanhood, to give up our right to them, to lay them down for the greater privilege of becoming children again, this is the greatest expression of personhood, exactly as Jesus did. I do nothing but what my Father tells me. We cannot become sons and daughters of childship any other way. This is where our childship is born, in our wills, and in laying these wills on the altar, an altar that is nothing more than the outspread loving hands of the Father who gave us our wills in the first place. And when we place them into His hands, He gives personhood back to us, enriched, infused, and filled with His life now, in place of the meager self we gave up, a personhood of growing Christ-likeness. It is what Jesus came to teach us and show us how to do. In Him is this possibility born in us. In Him does such relinquished life come to flower. In Him are we made alive to God, His Father and ours. It is this new life, created by the Lord's obedience, that we are called to share in with Him. No other creature can do this glorious thing. Only to man has been given this enormous potentiality to lay down the very nature of humanity and take God's nature instead. This is what MacDonald calls the creation in Christ, which comes to triumphant climax in the Garden of Gethsemane, and then culminates the next day on the cross where, in relinquished sonship, the salvation of the world was born. Though created by Jesus, we must enter into this abandonment life ourselves. He cannot do it for us. He has birthed the possibility. But only in the laying down of our own will, with His Spirit at work within us, do we bring such life alive within ourselves. When we say, "Not my will, but yours be done," when we will the will of God and then do that will, then do we become one with God, a true son or daughter of our true Father. From Jesus, an Obedient Son, by Michael Phillips, read by Michael Kimball. More information on this and similar writings may be found at fatheroftheinklings.com. Visit Amazon to purchase Jesus, an Obedient Son, and other books by Michael Phillips.